wrapping up Boshas, Chavalah. So the important sif we're learning this week is Sif Lamed Ches. Talks about Boshas in the form of insults. Even though the Gemara says, Baisho B'dvarim Pater, that Boshas, Medina the Gemara, you're only chayev for hitting somebody and embarrassing him, but calling him a name, you're not chayev. The long-standing minhag, going back at least to the time of the Gaonim, that they used to enforce sanctions for Boshas, and the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah have all kinds of technical details about what sorts of insults are you chayev for, insults against live people, dead people. Tonight I want to focus on a variation of this, something I alluded to back Monday. The question of, what if malicious gossip, Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemra, what if the gossip, besides being hurtful and insulting, actually causes somebody financial harm? And the common example discussed by the poskim, it costs him his job in a way that he can't get it back, and for all your efforts, you can't get him his job back. Are you chayev for the lost income, for the lost wages that your gossip cost him? So we mentioned Monday the tshuva that we discussed last night already of the Karnei Re'eim, discussion about a corrupt bank manager who lost his job when a fellow Jew told the boss that he was corrupt, that he was taking kickbacks from the customers. So we mentioned that there's a discussion there about whether he's chayev for losing his job. Tonight I just want to survey some of the general halachic literature on this topic. What happens if due to your motzi shemra or lashon hara, you cost somebody his job? Most of the examples we're going to discuss are motzi shemra. Some might include lashon hara too, even truthful slander. So the first major tshuva poskim quote is a tshuva of the Trumas Hadeshin. That would be 15th century. He was talking about a shliach tzibur, an official shliach tzibur. It was his job. He was employed by the community, like a chazan is today. Someone spread a malicious, untrue rumor about him that he had been engaged in sexual improprieties. So he was fired, lost his job. They replaced him. Eventually, it turned out that the people realized that the slander was false. But it was too late to get him back his job. They had already hired somebody else, and however the system worked, he was out of a job. So the question was, is the person who spread the malicious false rumor, is he chayev for the lost wages, for the loss of his job? Trumas Hadeshin rules, detailed analysis, maybe we'll get back to it a little bit later. Trumas Hadeshin rules that no, he is pater, it's only groma benizakin, it's indirect damage, indirectly causing somebody harm, is not sufficiently direct enough to be chayev. It's called grama, and he is pater. And as Professor Rockover, who I mentioned Monday, as he writes also, this is the consensus of the poskim. So after the Trumas Hadeshin, the next discussion we have is in the Sefer Ohalei Tam of Rabbi Tam ibn Yachya, an important early Sfardic Achron. He was talking about a case of a businessman who was part of a shutfus, who was part of a partnership, some kind of syndicate. People spread rumors about him that he was dishonest, that he was not trustworthy. So he was ejected from the firm. He was ejected from the business. Again, it turned out it was false, but I guess he couldn't get his position back. So again, he follows the Trumas Hadeshin and he rules, even though it's a terrible thing, even though he's worthy of punishment, Trumas Hadeshin also says, Basin could sanction such a person for behaving in such a reckless and malicious way. But in terms of strict tort law, in terms of the law of Chavalah, of Hezek, there's no tashlumin because it's only grama. Similarly, we have a tshuva of Rav Shlomo Kluger. Rav Shlomo Kluger was talking about, in the 19th century now, in Ashkenaz, Rav Shlomo Kluger was talking about a sofer stam, he wrote tefillin, mezuzah, sefer Torah. Someone, again, spread a malicious libel, a false rumor that he had raped a girl, and people stopped buying his tefillin and mezuzah, and this caused irreparable harm to his livelihood. So again, Rav Shlomo Kluger says he did a terrible thing and God will punish him, and there is a din and there's a cheshbon in the world, or the next world at least, but in terms of dinei adam, in terms of our ability to enforce the law of Chavalah, of Hezek, we can't do anything because it's only a grama. Similarly, Rav Chaim Palagi has a case of a businessman who people, also in the 19th century, people spread rumors about him that he was drunk, that he was impecunious, he had no money, so again, it was bad for his business reputation, so it cost him financial harm, it cost him business, it cost him parnasa. So again, Rav Chaim Palagi says that even though it's a terrible thing, based on they have the right to sanction, but mi'ikra din, it's only a form of grama, and b'dinei adam, there's no chiyuv, there's no consequence that we can enforce in based.
Rabbi, isn't that a grama also?
isn't
as I got if you put
as like as Gvul.
Yeah, right. So because people can still go and buy from him, it's just
yeah. So I would make 2 points about that. First of all, Asagas Gvul, in most of the discussion of Asagas Gvul, the question is usually, can Beis Din stop you from doing it up front? If you want to open a store, if you want to sell something someone else is already selling, can Beis Din say, no, you can't do it? After the fact, you already opened the store, you didn't listen, and you come a year later and say, my business was down 20% this year, please pay me for it, there's usually no claim. Almost all the Dinei Torah of Asagas Gvul are up front, can Beis Din make him stop? So here also, if a guy tries to spread a rumor, Beis Din will tell him, don't do it. The question is, after the fact, is there compensation? The answer is no. But other than that, yes, it is a good point. Some of the posts do compare it to Asagas Gvul, but they just say that Asagas Gvul is usur. Also, Asagas Gvul is a special takana, but I think the first answer is the primary answer. Asagas Gvul is also about lechatchila stopping him. Here we're dealing with, here there's no question. All the posts can say it's a terrible thing to spread false rumors, but b'di'avad, there's no real recourse in Beis Din for the lost wages.
Is there any difference with this type of Motzei Shemra or whatever? And all of those things are not really germane to the actual business he engaged in. But if you say, you know, this banker, I know he's ripping people off. He's taking their money. He's saying, he's doing a Madoff or whatever. Something like that. Is that the same?
So again,
that also is grama?
If it's true, then certainly it's a mitzvah to tell people if it's true. You're talking about if it's not true, obviously. If he tells, you want to know if it's worse, the fact that the gossip, the slander cuts to the core of the business.
Right.
I'm not 100% sure. My impression would be it would still only be grama. Maybe if we have time, maybe we'll discuss some of the rules of grama, some of the parameters of what makes it grama or not. We'll have to see whether the standards of grama, how they apply to slander that cuts to the core business. But I think the halach would be preview. My initial reaction would be that it has the same din. It's still only grama. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, his case actually may deal with your question too. He also deals with the case of a sofer like Shlomo Kluger. He deals with the case also of someone here. I think his case was somebody spread rumors that his tefillin themselves were not kosher or something, that he wasn't a competent or he wasn't an honest scribe. And he doesn't really discuss so much, again, in Choshen Mishpat, whether you're chayev, whether it's enforceable in Beis Din. He just takes for granted it's a terrible thing, which of course it is. And he discusses the question of whether, what should you do at least if you want to do tshuva? He discusses compensation, although again, he's not entirely clear whether he means it's the sort of compensation which is enforceable in Beis Din, or just what you should feel morally responsible to do if you want to do right by him, do right by God. And incidentally, when he sets forth the question, he says, the guy didn't know what to do, he says, you know, should he take out an ad in the paper and advertise that everything I said is false, it's filling up great, that'll just lead more people who hadn't heard of the initial rumor to learn now that there was gossip. You know, in the internet age, they call that the Streisand effect. It was a case where Barbara Streisand once tried to suppress some information about her, and it just ended up 1,000 more people knew about it because every lawsuit or every motion she filed to get it taken down, more people found out. That was the problem here also. There was no real way to issue a retraction. Everyone's going to think, oh, he's just doing it based on Maidim, but really, really it's true. So what's the Eitzah? So the Eitzah, Rav Zilberstein takes a very strict view and says he has to pay him. He has to pay, give him a monthly stipend and pay for whatever lost income, whatever he's losing, whatever you cause him to lose. If you want to do tshuva, you have to make up. The only way to compensate him is by paying whatever wages you cost him through. I don't know how you figure that out ever. Business is not, you know, constant. I don't know how you arrive at a real number. But he says that's the only way to do tshuva. He brings a very interesting kind of precedent for this. He brings a somewhat obscure comment in the Hagos Smach of Rabbeinu Peretz. Rabbeinu Peretz is talking about the case of a Jew who raped a woman. So the Torah has two consequences to that. One of them is you pay a special knas of 50 shekel kesef. Another consequence is you have to marry the woman. If she wants to marry you, she can obviously turn you down. But if she wants to marry you, the Torah says, "V'lo siel isha lo suchel l'shalchak lo yuchel l'shalchak kol yamav." You have to marry her. You can't divorce her. So Rabbeinu Peretz says, "What happens if he can't marry her? Maybe it's after Ken Marin Gershom. He already has a wife. He's not going to marry a second wife. So what does he do then?" So Rabbeinu Peretz says, he has to give her a payment besides the chamishim shekel kesef, besides the tashlumin the Chazal talked about of Tzar and Nezek and Shevis and Ripa. Besides all that, he has to pay her apparently a sum which would be the equivalent of the price it will cost her on the marriage market. They things were very mercenary sometimes. The additional price it would now cost her to get married, he has to pay her, since he can't marry her himself, he has to pay her the amount, the extra amount that she needs now to get married. That's what Rabbeinu Peretz says. So Rav Zilberstein says the same thing. If you cost somebody a job, to make him whole, you have to pay him the amount of wages that he would be losing due to your action. Again, due to the, just like over there, due to the humiliation and the pagam you made, you caused her to indirectly have a problem getting married, you have to make that up to her, here too. The truth is, the analogy is a little bit problematic, because Rav Zilberstein seems to assume that this ruling of Rabbeinu Peretz, that you have to pay money, is a form of compensation for injury. Another way to learn is it's really the equivalent of your duty to marry her. The Torah said, in addition to compensation, velosi elisha, you have to marry her. And if you can't marry her, the next best thing you could do is help her marry somebody else. But not because of simple compensation for chavala. It's based on the specific mitzvah velosi elisha. As a matter of fact, in the Sefer Shulchan Ezer, he discusses whether the Rebbeinu Peretz is talking about onus, someone who rapes a woman. In the case of mefate, someone who seduces a woman, where there is no absolute mitzvah deraisa to marry her. It's a mitzvah. We encourage you, but we don't force you to do it. Shulchan Ezer is not sure whether this din of Rabbeinu Peretz of compensation applies. He clearly understood it was rooted in the specific mitzvah of Elosi Elisha. It's not simply a question of compensation. In any event, Rabbi Zilberstein feels this is a model for the idea that if you cause somebody through the humiliation, through an outrage you perpetrate against him, you cause him indirectly financial harm, there is an inyan, he feels, for you to compensate the person by making up financially whatever you can do to make them whole, to make them at least on an equal level to where they were before you committed the outrage against him or her. One similar discussion, similar question, also having to do with marriage, occurs in a very cryptic, terse comment of the Maram of Rattenberg. In the medieval period, there was a widespread custom that if someone broke off an engagement, there would be financial penalties, knossos. And the Rishonim of Ashkenaz and Sfarad, both of them, they debated what is the legal underpinning, what is the halachic basis for these knossos. So in Ashkenaz, the Balitosis mostly understood that it was payment for boshes. You humiliated the man, humiliated the woman humiliated the man by jilting him or her. So as payment for boshes, you pay this knas. The Maram has a somewhat odd, somewhat difficult formulation. He starts by saying boshes, as the other Rishonim do, but he jumps from that into hefsid, into harm that you caused her, because you make it difficult for her to marry somebody else. Now she's damaged goods. It sounds very callous. It sounds like, you know, we all hope, ideally, people look at the person and not their history. But in the real world, I guess, he felt, in his time, maybe our time too, someone who was jilted once would be perceived as damaged goods, would have a harder time getting remarried. So you have to pay her. The Maram kind of mixes these two things together. He says, you pay for the boshes, and the boshes has to do with the fact that now it'll be harder for her to get remarried. So the truth is, there's a machlok sachronim how to understand the Maram. Two diametrically opposite ways to understand the Maram. The Nachla Shiva understands that the Maram, unlike the other Rishonim, is concerned with the damage, her financial damage, the fact it'll be harder for her to get remarried, or put differently, more expensive for her to get remarried, she'll need a bigger dowry. And the boshes is what causes that. Through the boshes, you caused her to be perceived as damaged, and therefore it costs her more effort, more money to get remarried. Maram is concerned with damage, just like with Zilberstein, just like some of the other cases we discussed, that you're chayev for the indirectly, again, for the financial harm that you caused by humiliating somebody.
Why not grandma here too?
Good question. We'll get back to that in a second. Very good question. The Rav Yosef Shalom Nathanson, the Shalom Eishiv, in his notes to the Nachla Shiva, the Nachla Shiva was very early Akron, 16th century. It was a classic reference work on shtaros and contracts and documents. There was a work called Kitzer Nachla Shiva, which became a kind of handbook for rabbis to use in preparing things like suva and other documents. Several hundred years later, Rav Yosef Shalom Nathanson disagrees with the Nachla Shiva. He says, you have it exactly backward. You misunderstood the Maram. He says it's grama, that there's no chiyuv for the hefsid. He says the Maram meant just the opposite. He meant the fact that it taught her for to get remarried, that itself contributes to the boshes. The fact that she walks around with this, the people looking at her and not wanting to marry her, that all contributes to the boshes. The chiyuv is boshes, that's all the other Rishonim say, as we learned in our Siman and Shulchan Aruch, not because of hefsid. Hefsid is just going to be grama. What the Maram meant was boshes, like everyone else. He just threw in the difficulty in getting remarried because that magnifies or amplifies the boshes. So Dr. Mann's question, what is Pshat in the Nachla Shiva? Why isn't this grama? We've seen all the other poskim say it's grama. So why shouldn't this be grama too? So the answer probably is that these knossos, these penalties that were associated with breaking off an engagement, they were usually written into the marriage contract, into the tznayim. The tznayim that they used to write in Europe typically included an explicit clause that, and the Nachal Shiv himself discusses this at length. He discusses the custom in Germany, the custom in Poland, the differences in the customs. This is a very long-standing custom to write these penalties into the marriage document itself, into the tznayim itself. The problem the Rishonim had was they felt that these contracts shouldn't be valid because they should have a problem of asmachta. Asmachta is a rule beyond the scope of our discussion tonight, but asmachta is a rule. Halacha often doesn't recognize arbitrary penalties, just as there's a similar, not that similar, but there's a kind of roughly similar principle in law, the idea that a penalty is against public policy isn't always honored, an arbitrary penalty that isn't correlated to any kind of loss. In order for the court to uphold the penalty, it typically has to be somehow considered fair and reasonable and has to represent some kind of expected loss. Halacha has a similar notion. The lumdus is somewhat different. And the halachic notion of asmachta is not because of public policy, it's because people didn't really mean it. But in any event, halacha typically commonly doesn't recognize penalties as enforceable. So the Rishonim looked for reasons why this penalty is enforceable. So one of the reasons they gave is boshes. Another reason they gave is because, let's say, according to the Nachal Shiva, the hefsid that she has, the difficulty for her to get remarried and the concomitant need to spend more money on a dowry. But not that this was a standalone cause of action, it was merely a justification why halacha should recognize the penalties that were written into the tznayim themselves. Now, Nachal Shiva's language is not so clear. In some of his discussions, he seems to understand like this, that he's just giving a reason why the clause that you wrote into the tznayim is valid. In other places, though, he seems to understand that this is a chiyuv gomer in and of itself. Then you have Dr. Mann's question, why is this different from all the other poskim who all seem to feel that this is only grama? And the truth is, it's not so simple that this is grama. There are some poskim, in that case of the corrupt bank manager we started with, there was one rabbi who did feel that you're chayiv, it was not simply grama. Again, a discussion of why, whether it is or isn't grama, why or why not, is beyond the scope of our talk. We're out of time. We'll leave that for another time, maybe. But in any event, the consensus of the poskim, the standard approach is that this is only grama. Rav Zilberstein wasn't necessarily talking about a chiyuv al pidin. He was talking about how to do tshuva, possibly. And even the Maram, who said that there is a chiyuv to pay for the injury to her marriage prospects, he may simply have meant like the Sho'el Meishiv that just magnifies the boshes. Even if he meant like the Nachal Shiva, that it's a cause of action in of itself, it might only be because you actually wrote it into the contract. But if there was no contract at all, he might accept the consensus that there's no chiyuv because it's grama. The only one who seems to disagree is that one opinion of Rabbi Yosef Berdugo in the Karnei Reim. I'm not sure what to do with his opinion. It seems to be against the consensus of all other poskim that this is only grama.